Welcome to these Bible lessons on the Old Testament. In these lessons, we'll cover God's magnificent creation of all the world, including the creation of man, the crown of God's creation. We'll follow with the sad fall of man in paradise and the consequences this brought to the world. In the continuing lessons, we'll teach how God visits men with the revelation of His covenant of grace. When we travel together through the entire Old Testament, we see God visiting His nation of Israel with revelations of this covenant of grace, pointing constantly to the coming Messiah, the Lord Jesus Christ. We hope these lessons are a blessing to you. Thank you.
If you recall, toward the end of the last lesson, I mentioned how they made Solomon the son of David king the second time. What does that mean, the second time? We will learn the answer to that question, along with some other pertinent parts of this history, as we consider how Solomon became king, as recorded in 1 Kings chapters 1 through 5 and 2 Chronicles chapters 1 and 2. In order to understand the background of Solomon's officially becoming king, we need to back up a little bit in history and take a closer look at the opening chapters of 1 Kings. Here we have a description in detail of the end of David's life. You probably remember from the last lecture that Chronicles gave very little information about what transpired before David died. Here, we are told, David had difficulty staying warm, so they found a young woman to bring to the king to help him keep warm. This, apparently, was a very common practice during this time in the Middle East. We may also deduce from other parts of this book that this woman, Abishag, actually became David's wife, essentially. Meanwhile, Adonijah, one of Solomon's older brothers, taking advantage of his father's old age and weakness, decided that he would make himself king. Absalom and Amnon were both dead, and Adonijah, being the oldest alive, as far as we know, thinks that the throne is rightly his. Furthermore, we read in verse 6 that David never disciplined him, so it appears that he did whatever he wanted and got away with it. Additionally, like Absalom, he was a handsome young man and probably well-liked. Job and Abiathar the priest help Adonijah with his plans, probably having ulterior motives for their own advancement in the future. Adonijah began his usurpation, like Absalom, with a solemn sacrificial meal, at which he was proclaimed king. Nathan the prophet was not invited to this feast. Neither was Solomon, for obvious reasons. Nathan realizes that both Solomon and his mother Bathsheba are in grave danger of losing their lives once Adonijah takes full control of the kingdom. Nathan advises Bathsheba to see David immediately. There are a few things we should notice right away in this passage. One is the number of times it is stated how old David is. Another thing is that Abishag is considered one of David's most recent wives. And we see how Bathsheba still treats David as king. Bathsheba mentions four items intended to stir David into action. First, She suggests that David is not current with how his kingdom is being run. Second, she tells David about Adonijah and his supporters. Third, she claims that all Israel wants to know who is supposed to be the next real king. And finally, she says that she and Solomon will be treated like criminals when David dies. Then Nathan arrives and tells King David all that has taken place with Adonijah. He then asks David, "Is this what you wanted and did not tell us?" David then calls for Bathsheba and reiterates that he swore that it was Solomon who should sit on the throne. David commands that Solomon should ride on David's own mule, and Nathan the prophet should anoint Solomon as king over Israel and Judah. And so it all takes place as David had commanded. Solomon is anointed king, the trumpets are blown, and a huge crowd of people shout and rejoice. We read in verse 40 that the earth rent or broke with the sound of them. Of course, this is hyperbole, but it must have been a large amount of people present to witness this coronation. The sound is so great that Job heard it and wondered what it was. One of the priest's sons comes in with what is bad news for Adonijah. David has made Solomon king, and he is now sitting on the throne. Adonijah fears for his life and flees to the altar. And there he holds onto the horns of the altar and pleads for his life. Solomon says that he will keep him alive if he proves himself worthy. So this was the first time Solomon was made king. In chapter 2, we read that David is about to die. He calls Solomon, and once again, he gives him spiritual instruction that closely resembles his advice that we considered in our last lecture. And although the words are almost identical to those in the final chapters of 1 Chronicles, most commentators agree that this is not the same time. These words are given to Solomon at David's deathbed. Again, Solomon is reminded that in order to receive the Lord's favor, he must keep God's commandments and testimonies. In addition to this sound spiritual advice, David also gives him some political advice. He tells Solomon whom he should punish, and also those he should take care of and show kindness to. David dies, and Solomon officially takes the throne. We read in chapter 2, verse 12, "Then sat Solomon upon the throne of David his father, and his kingdom was established greatly." So now, no one will question the validity of Solomon's kingship, right? Apparently, Adonijah is still scheming. He has a plan, and his plan is to marry Abishag. Remember, Abishag was essentially David's wife, so if he marries her, in a sense, he will be the king. Adonijah asks Bathsheba to ask Solomon if he will allow this marriage to take place. Adonijah knows that Solomon will not refuse a request from his mother. Or so he thinks. When Solomon hears this request, he explodes in anger. He realizes that Adonijah is still plotting to become king, and Solomon has him executed immediately. And this is not all. Solomon also banishes Abiathar the priest and sends him to Anathoth. He tells them that even though he is worthy of death, he will not kill him because of what he did for David by carrying the ark. But he does remove him from priesthood. When Job hears this, he realizes he is in serious danger as well, since he, along with Abiathar, supported Adonijah. He also flees to the altar and holds on to the horns, hoping his life will be spared. Even though Job is not a religious man, he hopes that being by the altar will keep him from being killed because it is such a holy place. However, Benaiah is told to kill Job regardless of his location. Solomon has now firmly established himself as king, and there is no further threat to challenge his kingship. There is one further enemy on David's list, and that is Shimei. Solomon instructs him to build a house and to stay in Jerusalem. The condition is that he may not pass over the brook Kidron, and if he does, he will be killed. Shimei agrees to this, but 3 years later, he is chasing after some servants who have run away. Someone tells Solomon that Shimei has left Jerusalem. Solomon calls him and asks if the agreement was that he should stay in Jerusalem in order to keep his life, and Shimei admits that it was so. Having broken his oath, Shimei is also executed. The chapter ends with the words, "And now the kingdom was established in the hand of Solomon." There is one more part I would like to consider of Solomon's kingship, and that is of his wisdom. In chapter 3, we read about a dream that Solomon had. God asks Solomon in this dream what he would like God to give him. If we were asked what we would like to be given, what would it be? A new car? Money? A good job? The choices could go on and on and on, but the same would be true for Solomon. What would he like? Perhaps more money. Perhaps a beautiful wife. Maybe a larger kingdom or a stronger army. Solomon's response is quite amazing. We can read it in verse 9. "Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this thy so great a people?" Solomon asks for wisdom, and because he asks for wisdom, above all other things, God will grant him other blessings as well. We continue to read, "Behold, I have done according to thy words. Lo, I have given thee a wise and an understanding heart, so that there was none like thee before thee, neither after thee shall any arise like unto thee. And I have also given thee that which thou hast not asked, both riches and honor, so that there shall not be any among the kings like unto thee all thy days. And if thou wilt walk in my ways, to keep my statutes and my commandments, as thy father David did walk, then I will lengthen thy days." Following this, we have an example of his wisdom at work. At some point after Solomon has returned to Jerusalem, two prostitutes approach him. They both have had a child, and one of the two children died during the night. The one woman accuses the other woman of stealing her child and replacing it with the dead one. Both women accuse the other one of lying about it. Solomon comes up with an ingenious solution. He calls for a sword and says he will simply cut the living child in half and give half to each woman. The woman whose child has died says that that's a great idea. The woman who rightly has the living child asks Solomon to spare the child's life and simply give it to the other woman. Solomon quickly realizes who is the rightful mother of the living child. This is just one example of Solomon exercising his wisdom. The chapter closes with these words, "And all Israel heard of the judgment which the king had judged, and they feared the king, for they saw that the wisdom of God was in him to do judgment." And so, Solomon is firmly established as the next king and is ruling in favor with God and man.